Hello there, welcome to the official EFL podcast. It's your weekly dose of what's coming, what's been, and everything in between. Cheltenham races may be next week, but we've got our noses in front of the chasing pack and nabbed a chat with the Cheltenham Town boss Darrell Clarke on the Robins battle at the bottom end of League One.
To be in this situation, still challenging with a quarter of the season to go, the spirit in the camp's very, very good, and we know we're still playing catch-up, which we have been all season. But one thing I will say is that we're used to that. We've been in the bottom four, so and the players are relishing in the challenges.
Sky Sports' Juliet Ferrington joins us once again, an expert hand on the EFL tiller, and your latest 72 in 72 attemptee is Wickham's Matt Butcher. Please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts so that you never miss an episode, or you can watch the show on YouTube every week. Here we go, hot off the press. It's the official EFL podcast. Right then, let's get cracking. That's woken you up, Juliet Ferrington. How are you?
I'm really well. Hair done yesterday, unlike the day the last time we did the pod recording. So I've managed to get all the colour from the front of my face in time.
To be honest, now that you pointed that out, I'm going to keep staring at just the top of your head. Just
your forehead.
The top of your forehead. Just to make you feel really uncomfortable. I'm only joking. It's nice that you could squeeze us in once again. I know you're busy travelling the length of the breadth of the country, grilling the great and the good. Right, joining us this week on the pod is a man who racked up over 400 appearances as a player. His management career began back in 2010 and over the following 14 years has done stellar work at Bristol Rovers, Walsall, Port Vale and now at Cheltenham Town, where he says he faces his biggest footballing challenge yet. With typical straight-talking perspective and good humour, a very warm welcome, Darrell Clarke. Hello.
Good morning, guys. How are we doing? Are we okay?
Really good, Daz. Thank you so much for joining us. I know it's busy, as ever, as a manager. As I said, you've labelled this potentially your biggest achievement in football, keeping Cheltenham Town in the division. Quick question, how's it going?
Tough. it's been a long slog, to be honest with you. You know, coming into a team that hadn't scored a goal and only picked up 1 point after 10 league games. It's been tough, but very enjoyable. You know, you look at the different skill sets needed at times as a manager. And why I said it'd probably be my greatest achievement was with the circumstances around the start. But really enjoying the job. It's a good little club, good people at the football club, and we're enjoying the challenge. But we've had a little bit of a tough run of late.
When you say you enjoy the challenge, though, Darrell, do you remind the players if it's been a little bit difficult for them, just how far they've come in just a short space of time?
Yeah, certainly, Juliet. Certainly, we when I came into the building, I had a fixed focus on winning 15 games, 15 projects, and just getting the belief into the boys to be able to do that when we're having a little bit of a dip in those results. But to be in this situation, still challenging with a quarter of the season to go, the spirit in the camp's very, very good, and we know we're still playing catch up, which we have been all season. But one thing I will say is that we're used to that. We've been in the bottom four, so and the players are relishing in the challenges.
Of your approach for that, you mentioned that, and Jules just said as well, given the situation that you found yourselves in, taking over in September, now you're 4 points from safety with a game in hand. I mean, what do you go in and simplify it, Daz? Do you go in and fire a few rockets off? What's your approach with that? Is it about assessing who needs what at that specific time?
Yeah, it is. It is, and it's treating each game as that. But what I have said as soon as I come in the door is we're going to win games no matter who we play. We're going after teams home and away. So that's been consistent. The consistency way of we working with the group that I've got at the disposal, shall we say, has been simplified in a game plan. Our pressing stats are very, very good. We press high up the pitch. We get after teams. We create very limited chances until I came into the building. Obviously, not scored a goal. So changing the old style, the whole way we go about things was needed. And the boys have responded to that great. So, but simplicity in game plan is every project. In League One, you've got different teams. You've got some technical teams, some very good technical teams, and then you've got some teams that are good physicality about them. And you have to find different ways of winning those games. But certainly against the possession based teams, we wanted to get after them with our high press. As soon as we win the ball back, try and score a goal wherever we are on the pitch.
When you mentioned skill sets just a few moments ago, and using your different skill sets, which ones have you had to use the most?
Do you know what, Julia? It's been different football clubs. I've managed to get a couple of teams promoted out of League Two, which, you know, they was dealing with top seven budgets. So it gives you a different skill set of leadership. So because you're expected to be in and around the promotion places. Whereas when coming into Cheltenham, I had past experience going into Port Vale where they'd been on a run in one, winning 18 and heading towards a League Two trapdoor and changing things around. And what I talk about skill sets is different ways of managing those situations and of not having the expectation at Cheltenham to go and finish in the top six of League One. It's trying to stay in the division, and it's a different skill set needed. You find yourself, although you're reviewing games in similar sort of fashion, you have to keep the environment positive. You have to keep the culture of the place, you know, as positive as possible, because we are going to lose games in League One. There's some big teams at this level, and with the resources we have, we have to keep things really bright in the building.
Do you have to then? It's a great question, Jules, about different skill sets. Do you do different things for different players? I mean, you've got the practically ancient Curtis Davis in defence, and I can say that because I know him, so it's absolutely fine. So, I mean, what's Curtis like? Is he one of those generals on the pitch for you? Is he one that you kind of lean on with regards to how your message is delivered on the pitch and in training?
Yeah, he's a great lad. He's a great influence in the changing rooms. What is he now, 38, Curtis? And he's been involved, I think, every game I've started him. And we put him in the middle of a back three. He heads everything in your box. But more than that, it's his talking, his communication with the players. And I think when you're in situations like this, when I came into the club, we had seven loans in. You know, 18, 19-year-old loans, and that was no disrespect to those boys, but we wasn't in that situation. You know, we needed our experienced players by Curtis Davis. Then I brought in Tom Pett, another experienced player, Matty Taylor, and the players that have that experience and know-how of this situation. You know, so different skill set needed with the players that we wanted in the environment, in the changing rooms. I mean, in the window we had, I got rid of, I think, 15 players and 10 players came in. So just making sure they had that enough experience. And with the likes of Curtis Davis, he leads that.
Was that 15 that you... Because we spoke to managers during the course of the window, didn't we, Jules? But from your point of view, that sounds like a lot of numbers out and a lot of numbers in from your experience. Is that... And you talk about managing at different clubs and what the parameters are. Did you kind of say, well, this is my rota of players and I don't want... And did you have power to be able to say, not necessarily I don't want this mob, get them out, but there's a lot of work I want to do with the club?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing for me was that the loans needed to go back because it wasn't the right players for the right situation. That was big for ourselves. So seven of those went back, and then it was a case of just freshening it up a little bit. Obviously, with the resources we have at Cheltenham, it's a difficult thing to do, but I did go for players that I knew before, that I've worked with before. Tom Pett came in, like I said, Matty Taylor will work with the Bristol Rovers, Liam Kinsella. So my main thing, Brooks, was to basically get a team that there's one or two players that I trusted and knew what I was going to get from them, because the window, the January window is so tough, because theoretically you're into a 16-week season. Okay, and the games come right through thick and fast, Saturday, Tuesday. So my way of working through that was to get the players that wouldn't need too much extra coaching, if that makes sense. So I didn't want too many development players that I wouldn't have time to be able to go and change round for the situation we're in, you know, and I've just been fixated in trying to keep the club in the division, then we'll reset in the summer.
How important is it then in that position that Cheltenham find themselves in, that you have those that trust in those players, but obviously the players have come in as well and they know how you work too, and also I guess they can remain calm and composed in those difficult moments?
Yeah, that's right, and they know our work, they know the culture and the environment that I set at football club. So, but with good experienced players or in the building like Curtis Davis that we talked about and Longy Miss Skipper, it just created the right environment for us to try and get the results, because we are the underdog in every game, and we have to use that as our strength. you know, this is a club of opportunity, and it can be a club of opportunity for the more senior players to try and stay at the highest level they possibly can. So it's a big thing that I use here at Cheltenham. I mean, if somebody had said to me, we'd sell a striker for 400,000 after not scoring a goal after 10 games, you know, Will Goodwin. He says, I'd have probably had him sectioned, to be honest with you. So it's been a mad turnaround, and it's like the know-how of the players that are coming into that environment, it's been key.
What is that culture then? What is your culture?
Do you know what? A winning culture, I say this all the time, a culture has to be a winning culture first and foremost. That has to be. But we have to enjoy our work. We have to enjoy the challenges. We have to create an environment that is hardworking, the non-negotiables, that never give in and never know when you beat, and all the basics, which are easy things to say but difficult to get into a group. So that's always key for the environment. And the team spirit is massive wherever I've been at to create that, because that sense of belonging, the group, lads, you know, the lads, there's 9, 10 of them go out for bite to eats at night. All of those things help to create that culture that I want at my football clubs.
Often clubs, if they're not getting results and performances that they want and they're in tricky situations, they do they go out on team bonding exercises, they go on days out and that kind of stuff. You just mentioned they go out for things to eat. Are you one of those managers that encourages or organises those team events?
Certainly, and good to mention that we've got the Cheltenham Festival next week, isn't it?
Well, I didn't want to mention it, but I just wondered.
You're all right, we've got the festival, so we're going to go on the Tuesday, we're going to train Tuesday morning, and we're going to go up with a group of players and the staff. I think it's vital, you know, for all the clubs I've had my success in, we've built that spirit. If people are getting along with people in change rooms and, you know, one of your teammates make a mistake, but you actually get on well with that teammate, you'll give it even more to try and help him out that situation. And that's what I like to build, because it's we're in a world where it's very critical. There's a lot of critiques on players, on performances and social media and whatnot. So but if we can build it into an environment of change rooms with that sense of belonging, then they can get on well with each other. So we'll certainly have a good day at Cheltenham Racers to kick on for the last 10 games.
So let's come away from the Cheltenham chat briefly. The Cheltenham Race chat, of course. Hopefully, I'll see you at some stage next week. Only in the posh places, though, because Jules would go, but the Guinness tent is out of bounds for that. There's a different podcast, which we'll delve into the details of at a later point. I'm joking, of course. Anyway, let's get back to footballers and football, because what we've spoken about so far, Daryl, is about having that perspective of how tough a relegation battle is. Yes, professionally, it's a real test. Overarchingly and overall, it's a very minute part of life. But also part of that is how you make your players feel, what you do for these players, the togetherness that's breeded when you do things like Cheltenham and you do have success together. The ceiling that players put on themselves, I get the feeling that you really enjoy smashing through those, because someone, for example, like an Elijah Adebayo, who you had at Walsall, would you have seen him as a Premier League striker? Was there a specific way that you had to deal with him?
I mean, he technically always had the ability, but so he obviously started off at Fulham. But Eli, like many of the players, they have a ceiling, and Eli's doing incredibly well and incredibly proud to be part of his journey. But it took a bit of cruel to be kindness with Elijah and certain players. And I've always said this is that when players are in your building, as long as they're not detrimental to the culture that we try and set here, we have to get the best of them as managers and head coaches. That is ultimately our job. And with that, every player needs managing individually in different ways. You know, Eliza Adebayo was different to a lot of other players are different, but it's up to us to maximise their ceiling and never give up on players as well, because certainly the younger players, for example, they come in from the Premier League under 21 developments, which Eli did. They take a bit of time to adjust to lower leagues, to understand the art of the importance of winning games, with the crowd being there and the different emotions of that. And it's up to us, the managers, to get the best out of those individually.
Can you tell, Daryl, if you have a player or a player comes in and then they become distracted or they have distractions and they have that little bit of attitudes. Can you see the signs around them?
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. You've got to read the situation and individuals very, very quickly. You can see the way that some players are not going to be for me or buy into what I'm trying to do. So you have to remove those in the right way. We give them the opportunity to start off with the non-negotiables, but it certainly doesn't work all the time, and that's where you have to be ruthless with your recruitment and getting rid of players to a certain extent. But like most players, they want to reach the ceiling. Some of the honest conversations I have with players is, how would you like to be managed? Do you want to sugarcoat it, or do you want me to get to the facts of what I've seen and what you need? And most players, if they have real ambition to want to better themselves, better their careers, they'll be honest with that conversation, and that gives you a platform to then realise how to manage it.
Yeah, but I guess that brings you that element of satisfaction as well and joy when you go on to see them progress and the part that you've played in their career to get them to where they're at.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. It meant to be very proud, and just as much satisfaction as seeing players like Eli Adebayo, Tom Lethew was he's the clever about the patron of the games from Mr. Ravers, and to see him playing the Premier League, captain the team, and he's very proud for me to see players that then have kicked on their careers and are playing at the highest level possible.
Well, you should take great satisfaction from that, Daz. And broadly, mate, it's been a pleasure chatting to you over the years. And like I said, that healthy perspective that you've got on life and that honesty is something that I really do truly value and respect you for, mate. So we wish you all the best. It's going to be tough. Oxford at the weekend. It would be your greatest achievement in football. And myself and Jules will keep a keen eye and fingers crossed that at the end of the season, it's Cheltenham Town that are above that dreaded dotted line, mate.
Thanks for having me, guys. Been a pleasure. Thank you.
Jules, take a break. Now we're going to listen to Wickham Wanderers' Matt Butcher as he attempts the 72 in 72.
Matt Butcher, and this is the 72 in 72. Wickham, Portsmouth, Wigan, Cheltenham, Accrington, Wimbledon, MK Dons, Charlton, Plymouth Argyle, Millwall, Sheffield Wednesday, Ipswich, Southampton, West Brom, Birmingham, Wolves, Derby, Salford, Leyton Orient. I've gone. Leyton Orient. Exeter, Bristol Rovers, Bristol City, Sunderland. Cities now. Cambridge, Stevenage. How many seconds I got left? How have I gone there? This is mad. No, I'm gone. See the countdown now. That's so bad, isn't it? How'd you go that blank?
Wickham's Matt Butcher there with his 72 in 72, a very respectable score of 25, which puts him 10th, which is below Callum O'Dowda, John Coleman, Tom Bradshaw, Ebo Adams, Wayne Rooney, Pete Wild, Danny Cowley, Richie Wellington, still at the top on 38, Matt Smith. And the more I listen to these, the more I think that Matt may have won this already in March. Anyway, we shall soon see as the weeks pass by. Jules, let's get stuck into the championship now, the gift that keeps on giving, the championship doing championship things. You've texted me before. I've yet to steal that other than on this podcast right now, so I'm necking that off you. Another wonderful midweek's worth of action. Never a dull moment at Ipswich. Leicester winning, Leeds win, both after looking fallible at the weekend. But let's throw it back to that game against Bristol City for Ipswich Town, because all the chat is about Leicester, Leeds, Southampton chucked them in as well. Obviously, their game was called off. Three huge Premier League teams. Little old Ipswich. I mean, does it bring into even sharper focus just how good they've been to maintain the pace that they have?
It certainly does. Remember, Ipswich were playing Port Vale last season and they get promoted to the championship.
More on them in due course.
Yeah, they get there in the Championship. But I often think with Ipswich, I always expect them. And as you say, because of the teams around them, because of the teams that they're competing against to win promotion to the Premier League, to be at the top and maintain themselves at the top of the Championship in that group of teams, I always think they're going to fall away for some reason. And every single game, they pull it out of the bag and they stay at it. And I think the atmosphere at Portman Road is huge. And that result against Bristol City, you just knew the way it was going towards the end and the added time that they were going to get that winner. And it's just such a fantastic story because they're up there with the Leeds, they're up there with the Leicesters, they're up there with teams that have benefited from being in the Premier League. Yeah. Yet Ipswich just seems to be on this constant groove up and up and up. And you can only just put that down to the structure of the club, the manager of the club, and the way the club is run. Because if it's right at that level, then it's only going to be right on the pitch. And I just think that if they could do it, it would be one heck of a story.
It'd be amazing, wouldn't it? And of course, I mean, generationally, we've known Ipswich is a team in the top tier, haven't we? So it's not completely beyond the realms of possibility that they would be back there. So they currently occupy second. They're 2 points ahead of Leeds, who play Sheffield Wednesday at the weekend. Southampton in fourth on 70 points. West Brom, they drew. They remain fifth. Hull City in sixth. A win for Norwich as well, given what we've seen from them. Coventry is another one that jumps out. It's a friend of ours, Mark Robbins. We're BFFs now, having spoken to him on the pod. 7 years in charge, just over exactly for Coventry. A big, big win. Puts them eighth and just 3 points outside the top six. I was chatting to a regional radio station about Mark Robbins and they asked what he was good at. And I just parroted what you told me what he was good at, which is remaining calm, keeping perspective, doing the job that he's done, reacting to poor defeats and poor performances, but still very much keeping themselves in that playoff shout. So between West Brom, Hull, Norwich City, Coventry and Preston, I mean, do we go all the way down to Cardiff in 10th on 50 points? It's a wonderful dust-up, isn't it, given what we like to see at the top of the division?
Well, Cardiff got a really important result in midweek as well. And they, as you say, they've got an outside chance. But just a word on Leeds United going back to the top end of the Championship is the fact that they've got more points at this stage of the season than they had in 2020 when they were promoted to the Premier League. And when you look at Leicester we all thought were going to run away with it a few months ago. It doesn't look like they are. They've got a real battle on their hands. And when you look at the Championship table as a whole, there are very few teams that have got anything to play for. And you've just thrown Cardiff into the mix as well.
Down at the bottom, QPR, the form that they're in is phenomenal, drawing against West Brom, of course. But we've got a real jam up at the bottom, haven't we? We'll mention Rotherham. I mean, it looks tricky to say the least for them to get to safety. But Sheffield Wednesday, 38. Stoke City, I know you've got your reservations about them. They're on 38. Huddersfield Town in 21st, 38 points. Birmingham, 39. QPR, 39. Millwall, Blackburn. See, I'm doing the same thing, Jules, but from the bottom upwards now. Grouping everyone into it.
But how far are you going to go up? Because you could tell Swansea in
you
there
tell me. You
how
tell me. Where do you want to stop?
Because, to be honest, when you look at that, you may need more than the traditional 40 points to avoid relegation this season, and it's such a battle. And I don't think we've seen it at the bottom end of the table this tight for this long. I can't remember the last time it was so competitive. It was so intense. I'm just looking at it now. And to think that they're all jammed in together and former Premier League teams in there as well. Big, big teams in there. And it made me think, to avoid relegation, if you're one of those teams, is it like a relief? Do you celebrate that fact? Or if you're at the top end of the table, is getting promoted better than avoiding relegation? And just a word on Hull City as well, by the way. Yes. Liam Rossignol pulling no punches, dropping points with what they're trying to achieve in midweek in those playoff positions. I was reading there's less than 1,000 tickets left for the game against Leicester this weekend.
Wow.
That is going to be some place.
It's
so hardly any team in the Championship has nothing to play for, and it's brilliant. It's mega.
Which is just the way we want it, given.
Exactly.
When do we get to the business end? Is that 10 games? It's got to be 10 and single digits, surely. We can't call it that just yet. Have we got a couple of weeks to wait?
We've got a couple of weeks. I mean, some are closing in on that, and there are games in hand as well, and they always cause chaos, don't they, when you've got games in hand. So it's so difficult. Top and bottom, it's so difficult.
Hopefully, if you're watching that on YouTube, I think Jules' expression and animation says it all. It's a sip of tea, isn't it?
Just to calm the nerves. And it's brilliant, and it's joyful, and it's fun, and it's emotional, and it's... I wouldn't want to be involved in it. I'm just going to sit back and watch.
We'll just sit here and pass judgment, Jules, which is the sweet spot. Right, let's move into League One. I'd like to say we've sorted the champ, but we haven't. The champ needs to sort itself out. And you can take your time, Sky Bet Championship, for as long as you possibly want, because we're loving it.
Keep it going to the very end.
Exactly. League One, Pompey, 6 clear at the summit ahead of Bolton, a place that you'll be frequenting in the next few days. They drew, of course, in the week. Posh hit 5. EFL Trophy for them against Wickham. I mean, that's in sight. That could be one hell of a game for them. But again, we're going to turn our attentions towards the bottom end of that specific table. Familiar names in it and a familiar name back in a job. Gary Monk, who, when you talk about Gary, who was such a big part of the Championship chat for several seasons with some very, very big clubs. You then look down, you do your prep, hopefully, and you realise that he hasn't been in a job in English football for what would be deemed a very, very long time in football, wouldn't it? So he's back. They've lost the last 4. The only way is up, potentially.
Well, we were messaging each other about Gary Monk. And we were just saying, where have you been? Get him on the pod. Ask him, where's he been? Why has he taken so much time out? But then he did have a lot of jobs in a short space of time. And he did well. He did well at Leeds. He did well at Birmingham. He's been away for a few years. I think Gary has so much to offer football. And I'm so pleased to see him back at EFL level. He's been out of the game too long. Mm-hmm. And I think he can offer something. And it feels like a really good injection of positivity at Cambridge. And again, he has that experience. He has that know-how. He has that calmness about him, and he has that composure. And I just think that he's talked about having a club that's got stability. And I just think Cambridge and him will do well together.
Mm-hmm. It's so intriguing, isn't it, the perception of what a manager does and is. I remember there was an interview that I'd done a couple of years ago with regards to Gary's time at different clubs in the Championship, and kind of said about the next one needs to stick, which I think at the time was Sheffield Wednesday. And I got short shrift from his agent, who said he averages out at a season a club, which, as we now know in the Championship, is unbelievable longevity, unless you're Mark Robbins. So we wish Gary all the best at Cambridge. Obviously, we spoke to Darrell Clark earlier on at Cheltenham. Just a wonderful man to chat to, just a wonderful way of discussing just everything, really, isn't it, really, off the back of what he's done in the game. But they are very much in the fight, absolutely in the fight. Port Vale, no win in 2024 so far. Darren Moore, he is at the helm, of course, with Vale. I mean, there's a couple others that are in and around that we're going to chat to. But Port Vale, any ideas? What's going on?
I don't really know what's going on with Port Vale. They don't really seem to have kicked on since Darrell Clark left. And I remember when Darren Clark left Port Vale, there was a bit of shock, a bit of surprise around the club from the supporters. They were almost relegated last season as well. They managed to avoid that. But the warning signs were there last season, and they don't seem to have kicked on this season for whatever reason. They don't score enough goals. I know that fans would like to have a recognised striker brought in. So I'm not too sure what's going on behind the scenes, but they've got Shrewsbury this weekend, and Shrewsbury are by no means safe from avoiding relegation either. And I also think that it's a little bit of I wouldn't say it's a derby, because there's about an hour's drive between Port Vale and Shrewsbury, Stoke-on-Trent and Shrewsbury. But it's close enough, and the teams are close enough to create that kind of edginess and atmosphere at Vale Park as well. And they, I think for Shrewsbury as well, I think the next 3 games for them could be pivotal in what, you know, they'll be looking to achieve and to avoid relegation if they can. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Port Vale. If they can avoid relegation this time, having just about avoided it last season, then you hope they will kick on, fresh start, new injection of energy and mood, and then hopefully they can push up further up the table and take on the next test that approaches them.
I like that kind of succinct, and it was the tone that you delivered it with. I don't know. There's a disappointment in that. I don't know. That's it.
I used to cover Port Vale a lot in local radio, and it was a great club under John Rudge. It was fantastic. They were earning replays against Arsenal in the FA Cup. They were flying high in what was the old Division One. The thing about Port Vale, the owners are good. They have good owners. And I think they so desperately want Port Vale to do well as a club. You've got Robbie Williams now involved as well with the club too.
What could go wrong?
Well, what could go wrong? Darren Moore, good manager as well. But he's come into a position that you're fighting fire with fire. Mm. So he's got to try and keep them in League One again so they can push on and get all the wrongs of this season and the season before right, and then go again.
Fleetwood, we've spoken to Charlie Adam on the pod. They are currently 1-5, giving themselves a fighting chance to get up and out of trouble. Carlisle looking slightly dicier. They're 23rd and currently at the bottom. Let's jump into League Two now. Big game at the weekend, of course, a seminal game in the history of football with MK Dons facing AFC Wimbledon, a last-minute winner, absolute scenes, which we love to see. They bounced back, though, with a win against league leaders Mansfield. Elsewhere at the top, Stockport are second. Paul Mullin emphatically back amongst the goals for Wrexham. They're level on points with the second place team. They beat Accrington Stanley, of course, with a Mullin hat-trick. Now, come on, Accrington Stanley, sit back. What have you got here? So, Accrington Stanley beaten by Wrexham at the weekend. They are 16th, 19 clear of the bottom two, 8 off the playoffs, but John Coleman has been moved on. Over 1,100 games over two spells, led their return to the EFL in 2006 after an absence of 44 years, and the club was a Northern Premier League side in 1999 when he took over, and the initial statement was about 43 words long.
I just feel that initial statement deserved so much more for two men, John and Jimmy. They are Accrington Stanley, a pair of them. Brilliant service together. Two people, I was looking, I actually wrote it down, nearly 25 years of service, the pair of them, to one club.
Like you say, he's been part of the furniture there. I mean, a day later, the managing director, David Burgess, said, "The Accrington Stanley Board of Directors want to thank John Coleman and Jimmy Bell for everything they've done for Accrington Stanley Football Club. Without John and Jimmy, Accrington Stanley would not be an EFL club. From coming here in 1999 and leading Stanley back into the Football League after 44 years, it was a dream come true for everyone then associated with the club." So it goes on to talk about the commitment, about it being unquestionable, and certainly he frames it as them making the club what it is today. Because, I mean, let's be brutally honest, for a very long time, the club was a one-line payoff in an advert, wasn't it? For a certain generation of kids about drinking milk, you know what I mean? So that's where they were. And now for the last decade, which has been the second stint of John being in charge, it's been discussing an EFL club. It's been discussing a successful EFL club, hasn't it?
They've done what they've done and they've built that club. They have built Accrington Stanley to where it is. They built that fan base. They built that fan base. They've had one hell of an adventure. Yeah. People use the word journey, but I actually think it's been a real adventure with that club. And to keep that club, as the statement from the managing director said, you know, they are the reason why Accrington are in the EFL. And
adventure's way better than journey. Journey's very X factor. Adventure's more something that we're all can get on board.
Adventures are the ups and downs, isn't it?
Yes.
The hills that you climb and then the mountains that you roll down afterwards. It's all part of it. But yeah, I just think that they are Accrington Stanley and they will be sorely missed.
The hills that you climb and the mountains you roll down. I think coupled off the back of our wonderful chat with Daryl Clark, Jules, you've just knitted this week's podcast together perfectly.
It's just my behaviour. It's just what happens to me. over hill and dale. That's the way you're going to live life.
There's a part for you in the sound of music before you know it. Don't worry about that. Anyway, Jules, it's been a pleasure as ever. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Two truly wonderful and well-rounded human beings right there. Makes this job an absolute dream. My sincere thanks to Daryl Clark, Juliet Ferrington and Wickham's Matt Butcher for his 72 in 72 time. Please do give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts. You know the places, or you can watch it all on YouTube. My name's David Prutton and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.